Welcome, my friends, to the another installation of the Nerdstalker Show. I am Adolfo Frond at Nerdstalker and at A Frond on Twitter, at Nerdstalker on Instagram, and all the things with my co-host and buddy.
Greg Gloria, a.k.a. Social Greg, on Twitter for Nerdstalker. How you guys doing today?
Oh, good. Oh, good. The hoodie show. All of us guys are doing good, my friend.
It's the hoodie show.
And it's big night tonight for the UFC. Tonight is my big fight against Conor McGregor versus Nick Diaz, the Irish fighter versus the Stockton's own Nick Diaz. Can't wait.
Is that why you're dressed up that way? Yeah. You're going to train? Yeah. Going to train?
Yes, it took a lot to exactly. My Cobra. This is Cobra Commander, by the way, sweatshirt, which I love so much.
Lovely.
From G.I. Joe, for all of you lovely people out there, if you remember.
Lovely. Lovely.
Let's get to it, my friend. Tech time. The events and all the things, huh?
Yes. Why don't you open up with Dreamforce, my friend?
Dreamforce. Let me just say this. Dreamforce, U2, okay? U2, the band U2. Enough said. Checkmate. Dreamforce, there we go. U2 is playing Dreamforce, October 4th through 7th. Need I say more? This is probably the biggest technology event in San Francisco. October 4th through 7th, again, Mark Benioff, Melinda Gates. There's some senator that's going to be there and a slew of other speakers. Everyone should be there of all types. It really applies to you, teachers, technologists, business people, all of it, you know, marketers, the whole gamut, UX people, designers, they got something for everyone at this thing. There's an early bird price. Check them out. Go to, you see it right here, the URL, salesforce.com/Dreamforce/DF16. There we go. Center, yeah, CEO of Red. Tony Robbins is going to be there again with his giant hands and more. Also, we got Mile IQ. So Mile IQ, check it out. It's automatic and a free app on for every device basically here. And it's automatic detection, one swipe classification, mile logging. It's never been easier. We have a discount code for all you guys, NerdStalker20, NerdStalker20, all one word. Give it a try. It's great for all you consultants out there that do any sort of traveling. It automatically, you know, makes everything sort of tracks all this stuff for you, and then you have an easy report for your tax deductions and all that stuff, and for your budgeting. All right, and sorry, that's my wife. SawyerSom.com. Check it out. It's another podcast, the Sawyer Som podcast. And we just recorded another one down here. Check it out. You can do a little search for Chris Sawyer or Sawyer Sommelier or Sawyer Som. All things wine, good stuff. And then, Greg, what else are we talking about here?
Oh, well, geez. You know, the annual event in music tech, the SF Music Tech Summit, has a startup pitch competition. And, you know, I'm calling out all you music startups out there to kind of enter that and get noticed, and it's a great event. I mean, you'll see some famous musicians, you know, from the Grateful Dead, like Mickey Hart,
awesome.
You know, up there. You'll see a lot of those type of nice people, you know, and it's promoted by our friend, Brian Zisk. So anyway, if you're a startup, go ahead and enter their startup competition. It's going to close on September 1st, so get your entry in now. All right. Let's get started here. Picks of the week. We got to do picks of the week, right? So what's this Google Cloud Database Services is now out of beta? What?
Yes, here we go.
Oh, sorry. I was too fast for you. Too fast for you.
Yeah. Yeah, so thanks to TechCrunch and everyone else. Everyone seems to be reporting on this story too. Google's making a number of announcements around its cloud platform. A ton of them. So that's why this is sort of an important thing. It's like when Google sort of mentions one release, it's important. But when they announce this many, it's very important. So Google's making a number of announcements, as we mentioned. Most of these focus on the various cloud database services. But the company is also making a major update to its low-cost nearline cloud storage service for cold data, making its disk volumes faster and allowing its users to bring their own encryption keys to cloud storage. The overall message by Google is clearly trying to send here is that its cloud computing services are ready for production use, right? On the database side, the big news is that all of Google's cloud database services, which are now out of beta. That means the company's second generation version of Cloud SQL, which allows you to easily run and manage MySQL databases in the cloud, is now generally available after about 9 months in beta. Cloud Bigtable, another NoSQL database, but with a focus on very large analytics, operational workloads, is now generally available. Also out of beta is the API for Google Cloud Data Store, Google's NoSQL database for web and mobile app workloads. Cloud Data Store itself has already generally been available for a while, but developers were only able to use it as part of the Google App Engine with the API. Developers can use it for applications outside of App Engine as well. The company says Cloud Data Store, which is used by the likes of Snapchat, currently handles 15 trillion requests per month. Google notes that it's also it's added various features to these services. Obviously, it has a 99% SLA now, uptime guarantee, and also has a flagship database server in the cloud, in Google Cloud for Microsoft, which also offers SQL Server images with built-in licenses. And this is really important because most enterprises still use SQL Server and Microsoft sort of services. So in order for Google to sort of attack them and wean them off of that, that's what they're certainly offering now. I think eventually, what you're seeing here basically is Google stepping up and saying, hey, we're going toe-to-toe against Amazon AWS and Microsoft in the cloud as well. And we're a viable player now. This is the first dips. That's what's so important about this, is this is sort of the plumbing, right? The database stuff and the underlying foundational type of stuff. And they're production ready. They've been using this in-house for years, all of this stuff. And it's super cheap, just like Microsoft and Amazon's. We're talking like a penny per hour or something like that.
Nice.
Depending on the workload for most of this stuff. And so it's interesting times. Google's officially in the really big database cloud game, and there you go.
Wow, that's wonderful. I mean, as you guys are going to see in the next few articles, this is the Google show, but that's a good way to open it up. I mean, yeah, I guess that is an attack against AWS and Microsoft as infrastructure providers, right?
Yeah, they just gotta be in the game. I mean, they're already so, they're such a fantastic cloud. They have so many fantastic cloud offerings that it only makes sense for them to sort of, to start competing against Amazon and Microsoft, and not letting them take the entire pie.
Well, yeah, funny, Google's never been good at marketing, I felt.
Yeah, that's a good
because
point.
I think there's a lot of great stuff they have.
Yeah.
I got an email the other day, from, we signed up one of our nonprofits in Japantown on Google Apps, and, we never used to hear from them, it was just like, okay. But, a few days later, someone actually reached out on email, a person that kind of handles accounts, and say, hey, everything okay, and that's the customer service aspect, but I also look at that as the marketing aspect as well. Of letting us know we're here to help you, get in your mind all the time. So it's interesting. Right.
Well, they've definitely gotten this far on, the popularity of search and the quality of their
buzzers. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, Gmail, we're all dependent on it. Yeah. Even to watch this podcast.
Yeah, that's
so,
right.
So, yeah. Anyway, wow, that's good. All right.
So, Greg, Google's discounting something or discontinuing, excuse me.
Well, I think they're discounting a lot of their hardware recently, but they're discontinuing Google Plus Hangouts on air, whether you guys care or not. We care because we're...
Again, my friend, don't ever laugh at me.
Oh, sorry. that's a piggyback ride for Greg, for Adolfo. Anyway, thanks to VentureBeat and a lot of our followers on Google. I mean, on Google. I don't know, on my Twitter. But anyway, thanks to...
Revenge is mine.
And Neil Podlansky. I don't know why these writers have such difficult names for me to pronounce, but they are tough for me to pronounce.
Podlansky. Podlansky.
Yeah, thank you. But anyway, as of September 12th, you will never see an HOA hashtag again. I just want to let you know. So Hangouts on Air will longer be available on September 12th, which is a little bit less than 4 weeks from now. Google user would be asked to use YouTube Live instead. And I think it's just a natural progression, right? I've always wondered why, you know, we had to take this extra step once they announced YouTube Live, but it just takes a little while to roll these things out, I guess. So Google first debuted the live streaming feature for its Hangouts group video chat on Google Plus back in September 2011. So it's been out there a while. And here at NerdSoccer, right, we use it exclusively, right?
Yeah.
It's the only one that we found, you know, that's been kind of friendly enough to kind of like allow multiple people to join our conversation here, right, Adolfo?
Yeah, and we can have like a live show, you know what I mean? And it automatically feeds to your YouTube account.
Yeah.
So I guess it, you know, it makes sense, but then you hear what, that people aren't using Google Plus anymore and stuff too. So who knows?
Well, and that was another thing, right? They had this like Google Plus makeover, I think, at the end of last year or something like that, right?
Right.
It's not even on my mind, right?
Right.
I don't even know the date they released it, but I think it was the end of last year. And I tried it for a little bit, but it was just so frustrating because I use Google Hangouts on air so much, I couldn't figure out how to get there. So I just stayed with the classic view.
Yeah. I just switched back, for this one, too. I switched back to the classic view.
Isn't that hilarious? You know, so, and we'll all admit, Google has really played a great game in UI, UX, and all that stuff. But anyway, you know, you'll find the YouTube Live on your account. It's on the left-hand side. Now, you go to Creator Studio, you'll find all that stuff there, and you'll be able to schedule it right now before they kill it, and it'll actually, I think, link back to Hangouts on Air. So, cool. But up until September 12th. So, you know, start planning for the future. Get on YouTube Live, everyone, and start
get on the future.
Out. Yeah. Okay. Let's see what's next here. The stuff we really need is getting more expensive, and other stuff is getting cheaper.
Yeah. So as you can see here, thanks to the Washington Post, Christopher Ingraham for this one, you see this little graph here that sort of illustrates basically the point, right? Sociologist Joseph Cohen of Queen's University is fond of saying that, quote, America is a place where luxuries are cheap and necessities are costly, unquote. So a recent chart from economist Mark Perry of the American Enterprise Institute using data from the Bureau of Labor Stats illustrates as well. Since 96, the prices of food and housing have increased by close to 60% faster than the pace of inflation. Costs of healthcare and childcare have more than doubled. The price of textbooks and higher education nearly tripled.
Yes.
On the other hand, the prices of things like mobile phone services, toys, software, and televisions have plummeted over the same period. So we're talking our world, right? Technology, you know, electronic products, things like that. For many Americans, in other words, that shiny new flat-screen TV is now more within reach financially than it's ever been, right? But it's harder to afford the house to put it in, food to eat in front of it, or medical care to ensure that you outlive its extended warranty. What's going on here? So Perry points out that most of these things falling in price are manufactured goods, and that the price of those goods have been falling for decades as a result of technological improvements and productivity gains. Agile, you know, and productivity, things like that. The miracle of manufacturing delivers low prices, right, is what they're saying, all that goodness. And then he also points out to trade as a factor. Many manufactured goods like TVs and appliances come from overseas where labor costs are cheaper. International global competition lowers prices. There's that whole argument, right?
DT's argument.
Over on the flip side, things like education and medical care can't be produced in a factory, so those pressures don't apply. Compounding it, many Americans are insulated from the full cost of those services. Private and public insurance companies pay most of the medical costs, so there tends to be little incentive for individuals to shop around for cheaper medical care. In the case of higher education, the nation's massive student loan industry bears much of the upfront burden of rising prices. To the typical 18-year-old, a $120,000 tuition bill may seem like an abstraction when you don't have to start paying it off until your mid-20s or later. As a result, the nation's college students and graduates now collectively owe upward of $1.3 trillion in student loan debt. Prices rise when healthcare and college markets are not competitive and not exposed to global competition, Perry says, and prices rise when easy credit is available, hence our current predicament. We can afford things that we don't need, but we need the things we can't afford. Whether the 20-year trajectory in the chart is sustainable is another question entirely.
Wow.
So that's a lot of stuff going on, outside influence, you know, this is all very political, I know, but it's interesting to see that our world, the tech world as well, you know, has all those prices have dropped significantly for a number of factors, right?
Right.
And one has to wonder why can't those other institutions do the same to some extent, or at least be influenced to some extent?
You know, I was wondering about this the other day, and this is great you brought this up, because what I was thinking about was, you know, we've kind of bucketed our whole life around, like, there's this services sector, and then there's this other thing sector, and the services sector, you know, for the average person, like you and I,
right,
it's this ethereal thing that kind of lives in this thing called the cloud, and then we access it through a portal. That's just kind of like, but everything on the back end, it's plumbing and everything, I guess we don't care about, quite frankly, anyway. We just want to get our services. But, but I mean, that to that graph's point, that's the thing that actually has cost us all, you know, an arm and a leg. You know, in California, probably it's costing us a good chunk of our 50% of what's left of our paycheck after taxes.
Yeah. I mean, you hear about people like doing those, you know, and I'm hearing about it more, people doing things like what we call medical vacations, right? Or whatever. They'll go to places like Singapore or Indonesia or whatever for very good quality sort of medical surgeries or things like that.
Right.
Or you can even get a lot of minor stuff done for next to nothing if you just go south of the border to Mexico or something like that. I'm hearing a lot of people doing that type of thing too for some elective surgeries or things like that. So
that's wonderful.
It'll be interesting to see what happens and how, if that becomes like the trend, and it seems to be, because in education as well, you know, when we talk about online education, people not going to higher ed, the return on investment in universities or colleges, that debate. And
up
a lot of issues.
My son just went to college, and you know, I'm just surprised now of a percentage of textbooks are his tuition now.
Wow,
you know,
really?
It used to be really small, right? I mean, it used to, was a blip, but now it's pretty close to, at least in the state system here, it's over 10%.
Wow.
You know, which is amazing to me, right?
That's no joke. Yeah.
It's just amazing to me. And now I don't know if relatively those prices have held like that over the years, but if the graph that you just showed is any indicator, it probably hasn't. You know, it's gone from probably 5% to 12% or something like that. You
sure. Yeah.
Wow. That's wonderful, Rodolfo. Great article. Thanks for sharing that.
All right. So what do we got up next? We got
the big debate
Intel,
out there.
USB. All right.
Not UFC. USB.
Oh, USB. Okay.
Sorry.
Just as exciting.
Or can be, at least for an electrical engineer like me.
But you know, Type-C. Oh.
Yeah. I've heard this thing, right? Remember when the iPhones went to the new connector, right? The new connector is supposed to like solve all our ills. But what pissed us all off was really all the dongles that you had to come out of this thing, right?
All right.
To handle. But now this USB type spec now is bringing Apple now has even adopted this. And so thanks to Steve Dent of Engadget for this. And the standard gets new audio and video display functions. I think we've heard this before, but anyway, judging by the comments on articles about Apple's next iPhone, the iPhone 7, and the Moto Z smartphone, the pug's not crazy about ditching the headphone jack. However, Intel and its partners have embraced the idea, meaning they're shoving it down our throat. Mm-hmm. And at the Intel Development Forum, company architects Rahman Ismail and Brad Saunders explained why. It's all about changes to the standard that will really make USB Type-C the right connector for audio. Okay. Now, Now, I've also seen data out there that you know, headphones now are shifting towards wireless anyway, right? So, right. You know, I think we're just all pissed off that I think we're just all pissed off that we spent, you know, $500 on our latest Beats headphone and that's connected.
right.
And now everyone's moving away from that. But, you know, that's a whole another story. So, you know, a bunch of these newer phones, the Google Nexus 6P, Chromebook Pixel, and MacBook laptops will be moving towards this, you know, and nixing the 3.5-millimeter audio jack. You know, I think on my MacBook here, I've already gone to this you know, USB to audio adapter, right, that you could buy almost anywhere cheaply now, right? And that's how we do our podcast here. All my microphone goes through a mixer just to balance everything, and then goes into this USB port. You know, so and long ago you never had an input jack for your audio for a MacBook, so that was your only option, right? So looks like they're just moving us forward. But we also will include a link to the CNET article, which really kind of explains the Thunderbolt 3, which is USB C compatible. But I don't know, Adolfo, what do you think about, you know, moving us to these standard connectors? Sounds like a good idea, maybe.
Yeah, it sounds like a good idea. I mean, it seems like the same old story you've been hearing for years, right? I mean, we've been trying to standardize on stuff for forever, man, whether it's like, I don't know, you know, at least in the television world, they seem to have done it with HDMI, right?
Yeah, totally. But, totally.
I mean, you still see USB ports on the back of televisions as well.
I don't know,
man. You know, I'm not crazy about this wireless idea of the headphones, but that's perhaps another matter. But
it's another story.
If we could get standardized on various platforms, that would be wonderful.
I mean, the amazing part for me was that the Apple Thunderbolt 3 and USB C are compatible. I mean, that just blew my mind, right? Totally blew my mind, because usually Apple's been off on the side, you know, saying, okay, we're going to try this back, you know. And so most of us, I think a lot of us, are multi-device, multi-manufacturer, right? Google, Apple, you know, whether your MacBook or your laptop's Mac and your phone's Android and all this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's been this smorgasbord of connectors and cables that we've been running through.
Well, it's one thing if it's like a file type, you know what I mean, like a JPEG versus a GIF versus, you know, or whatever, Excel versus a doc versus whatever. But when it's a physical thing that we have to deal with in the world, you know, and to have multiple different cables and items is just, you know, it's more friction. So yeah, would it be nice to consolidate that stuff? Absolutely, especially in the physical world, 100%. But
yeah, I haven't gone to the wireless headphones yet, though I ride the bike so much, and I've been guillotined a couple of times. It might be a good idea for me.
I'm still super conservative on my phone about, like, when I leave the house, making sure that, you know, certain applications aren't using GPS or location stuff, or my Wi-Fi is turned off so it's not seeking Wi-Fi, or Bluetooth is turned off when I'm not using it so it's not seeking. Right. You know, draining the battery as well if it isn't smart enough to not handle itself properly, you know.
So to add
a wireless device on top of that needs battery usage, that obviously needs charging, you know, in some way.
We're gonna love our next 10 years of charging. We'll our see. Charging life. That anyway, speed rounds. Speed rounds.
All right. So, thanks to Thurrott for this one. I like this. Paul Thurrott and several others have actually reported about this. Google is killing Chrome web apps on Windows, Mac, and Linux. So Google announced today that they will be removing support for web apps from its Chrome web browser on Windows and on Mac and Linux as well over the next 2 years. So that's kind of cool of them to give you sort of a two-year head start to sort of start to transition your Google Chrome apps out of that world into just a traditional web application type of interface type of thing. So there are two types of Chrome apps, right? Packaged apps and hosted apps. Google VP says, today, approximately 1% of users on Windows, Mac, and Linux actively use Chrome packaged apps, and most hosted apps are already implemented as regular web apps. So Google launched Chrome web apps in early 2013, providing native app-like functionality across platforms using standard web tech like HTML, JavaScript, and CSS. Available from the Chrome Web Store, these apps run outside the browser, work offline, and offer additional capabilities over web apps that run in the browser. Paul is curious about the real motivation behind this for ending the support. His thought first was that the firm believes that Chrome OS based devices are now more fully functional competition for Windows PCs and Macs, thanks to the coming support for Android apps, and that supporting Chrome web apps on other platforms is no longer necessary. But Google's presenting this change as part of its ongoing plan to simplify Chrome. It previously killed the Chrome app launcher that first debuted with Chrome apps back in 2013 and the Chrome Notification Center. Users who rely on Chrome web apps on Windows and Mac and Linux are advised to simply use web apps in the browser. And the firm has provided a migration guide for developers, which is weird. It kind of sounds weird, right? But you have some time before you need to worry about it. Again, they're giving you years to deal with this. He assumes a change will have no impact on your favorite Chrome feature. The ability to add any website to the desktop as a standalone web app. And, there you go. It's basically showing the power of web applications and just the browser itself. And its development to actually be we're finally getting to the point where web applications are truly just as good as apps or standalone applications. And we're quickly getting to that point, sort of like when we were talking about back in the day with other sort of like JavaScript script libraries and things like that to make the front end just as powerful, as I said, as standalone applications, things like that.
Wow, that's interesting. Now, I guess extensions still exist because it's in the web browser, right? It's just these... explain this to me, is just these extra apps that you had to do because you're on an iOS platform to make Chrome work.
It would be like features it would be like a packaged application web application.
I don't know.
It's not something that's in your browser, like the browser's handling. It's like a packaged sort of web application that the Chrome OS would use, but the Chrome OS is web-based too. So it's kind of confusing, right? So it's like sort of like a box within a box is sort of what they were doing. And what they're doing is removing that and let it be truly native. So again, like one of the features was something like offline usage, right? They would do that back in the day because there wasn't really good support for offline usage of something, let's say like Google Docs or something.
Right.
Whereas now there is, now you can do that stuff with web technologies fairly well. So
wonderful.
There's less of a need for this specialty sort of, we're moving to a truly sort of native web world.
Right. Wow. That's wonderful.
All right. Speed round. What's next?
All right. Let's talk about the Daily Distiller. Thanks. That was an article that we actually put up on our site, on our blog. The Daily Distiller is kind of a cool, goes in your inbox and it's pretty cool. Actually, I actually liked it because it was just very simple. And, so we interviewed Bobby Samuels, and you can see that on our webpage there. But, the Daily Distiller is basically a distilled version of the world news in one page of your email.
Cool.
So, and it kind of reminded me, and I was saying this in the article, kind of reminded me of like a newspaper feel for some reason.
Oh, nice.
And the reason why it did that is because they put, every daily, distiller has a mixed drink recipe.
Oh, sweet.
It has a cartoon.
We like that.
All right. Yeah. We love that. There's a moment in history on this day that they go through. So they have that distilled in this thing. And, no more than two or three bullet points for news, business, technology, culture, sports. And talking to Bobby Samuels, it made sense why he launched this. He was a former editor at the Crimson for Harvard. he and his friends who are millennials, you know, it's that age group, really felt that they weren't getting, it was too difficult to get a pulse on the world news. You know, you'd have to go to Flipboard and kind of like subscribe to a bunch of things. And then if you really want some other things, maybe you would use Feedly or something else. I mean, so he really wanted to just give us a quick inbox if, while we're on the train, plane, automobile, well, not automobile, but maybe an autonomous automobile, but bus or taxi, a way of just quickly checking what went on in the news and then move on with your life. So, yeah, check out the Daily Distiller. They were, you know, I think on the 19th, which is yesterday, they had a campaign running to get tickets and airfare for the Hamilton in New York. And so, you know, I thought this was good. You know, I thought it was fresh enough to write about it because I've never seen anything like this. So I thought it was really cool.
Wow. Very cool.
Anyway. All right.
Nice distillery.
Speed round. Yeah. Speed round. Yeah.
Research. So Snowden was right.
he always was.
There we go. Researcher grabs VPN password with tool from NSA dump. This has been verified. This is a really kind of a crazy, spooky story that I think we all kind of knew, you know, well, those of us in the tech world anyways. Cisco has already warned customers about two exploits found in the NSA-linked data dump by hackers calling themselves the shadow brokers. Now researchers have uncovered another attack included in the cache, which they claim allows the extraction of VPN passwords from certain Cisco products. So let me repeat that because it's really important. So, it allows the extraction of virtual private network passwords from certain Cisco products, meaning hackers could snoop on encrypted traffic. So your secure traffic? No. It's not. Security researcher Mustafa Al-Bassam first documented the hacking tool, which uses the code name BenignCertain. In a blog post published Thursday, he coined the attack Pixpocket after the hardware the tool targets, Cisco Pix. It's an old piece of hardware, a firewall and VPN appliance. Corporations and government departments might use these devices to allow only authorized users onto the network. And in fact, there's quite a few of these still out there. Now this device in general is about, you know, from 2009. That sounds old, but some people, a lot of people and organizations still have this hardware working in action out there. You'd be surprised. So based on his analysis of the code, he writes that the tool works by sending a packet to the target machine and makes it dump some of its memory. Included in the dump is the VPN's authenticated password, which is used to log into the device. And this was verified by someone else here, as you can see in this little visual up here. Brian Waters, another security researcher, tested BenignCertain with his own hardware and managed to obtain the VPN's password, also known as a pre-shared key. On Friday, he tweeted a message of the outpost from his test, which revealed his test password, as you can see below here for those of you watching in the black box right there, password 123 was returned to him among a list of two other possibilities. And he was able to pop out, you know, from the outside interface. So this is meaning the one that could be connected to the internet, you know, meaning basically some kid at Starbucks could do this, right? Or anywhere. So he says, you know, to me, this is verified. Yeah, and I would agree that it is, right? It's proof that VPN uses authentication with pre-shared keys. The NSA could have remotely sent a packet to that VPN from an outside IP and grab pre-shared keys. So an attacker might then be able to snoop on a target organizational traffic and spy on its users. So as you can see, you know, this has been, I'm sure, been happening for quite some time. And, you know, this is sort of an older exploit, you know, brought to us by a data dump. And as we probably know now, I'm sure it's been more and more, you know, sophisticated now, even though there is new hardware, I'm sure there's been improved, quote unquote, improved ways of getting this encrypted traffic, not unencrypted, or getting a password just to outright hack this stuff. So a very interesting story and another validation of Snowden's, you know, however you want to see your particular take, his patriotism or whatever.
That's cool. Cool. That is so cool. Wow. That's, I mean, what we don't know is what we don't know.
Yeah. Well, what you suspect is probably true.
Probably true. Hey, we should coin that. Anyway, wow, that's scary and interesting at the same time. I don't know how to feel about it right now.
Well, let's go to something a little more cheerful. Speed round.
Okay.
Music and Intel.
Hey, man, this is cool. At the last J-pop music summit, we hung out in the tech summit area, and it was mainly for Japanese tech. And we found this thing called Kagura. I know it's hard to pronounce, but basically using Intel Sense technology, which uses called RealSense. It uses both the HD camera, the IR camera, and the laser projector. They're using this technology to create sounds and music. So if you look at the screen there at the top there, you see all these dots. Those are musical instruments, and you could just use your hand actually to hit cymbals and drums and whatever those circles are and then keep a beat and create music, and without any musical talent, without knowing a major or minor chord or what the hell those are. So, you could take this thing for a laptop and then mix it with a music workstation like a DJ would have, and really have some pretty good fun with it. In their video, it shows a guy dancing to it. So basically, you know, this Intel RealSense, you know, similar to the Xbox stuff, right?
Very cool.
You know, and Wii in the day, senses your body motion and activates those little circles you see in
like
that
screen. Connect, you mean, or something? Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, I think it's just it's a modern version of the Kinect. So,
pretty neat.
Yeah, pretty cool, huh? All right, speed round. Let's go on.
Tip time.
Oh, yeah. Tip time.
All right. So my tip is, we're going to my tip first, yeah?
Yeah, you too.
Yeah, Type Nugget. All right, Type Nugget. So basically, in the browser, here's another example of the power of web browsers now and web technology. You can typeset and generate beautiful bulletproof CSS in the browser and typography, right? So for all you font freaks out there and you typography freaks out there, you can make your own little cool like typography action, you know, here and customize it. So let's try it out here. So in the browser, here we go. It gives you some like, you
know, awful fun.
Some general text that it's loading here, and we're going to go with sans. We're going to, you know, whatever, play with the font, and let's throw a 400 font weight to make it ridiculous, and then let's go italicize it, and you get the gist of it here. You can, do all this stuff. Let's underline all this stuff, and we can do a sort of transformation, lowercasing everything. Let's do that. So everything's lowercase, them all below, and yeah, so you see there's all these variations of it. And then up here in the upper right-hand corner, you can generate the code. You can get different views of it coming soon and different mobile views, obviously, here. And then it generates the code, so you could just paste it into your particular project, web page, or whatever. You can work with the headings, the paragraphs, the links, the lists, et cetera. So it's a really neat way to sort of auto-generate all this stuff. Create sort of customize your typography here, and then you got generate the CSS to throw into your website. So thing called here you can go to beta.typenugget.com or just Google Type Nugget.
That's nice.
Nugget, if you will. All right.
Wow. That's Greg, so cool. Thank you for that
tip.
This is the Google show. So we couldn't end the Google show without the ultimate guide to Gmail productivity. And you know, thanks to the Doug Iamoth from Fast Company, as well as Harry, who's our friend. I forget his last name, sorry. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there's a bunch of tips in here that really I thought was really cool. Now, there's some I'm not really too thrilled about, but like making Gmail look more like your Outlook, but you could do it. You can do it. There's a lot of experimental stuff out there. And, you know, I think, you know, when we're using our Gmail, we forget to go to the labs, right? And a lot of these things could be found in the labs. There's a lot of really cool things like well, I knew about labels and filters and getting more organized with that. But one of the coolest ones I saw, let me see if I could get down to it here. Let's see. I knew it. Sorry about this, guys. Oh, create a new Gmail address on the fly. I thought this was really cool. So let's say you want to get really granular with your filters and want to set up a second account for a service that's already using your Gmail account. So you could create a virtual Gmail address that's tied to your primary Gmail address simply by adding plus anything between the at symbol and Gmail. So when you're giving out your address, so let's say you plus eBay at gmail.com for action bids, you plus shopping for online spurges, stuff like that. But it still links to your Gmail account. So it's all linked. I thought that was really cool. That was one of the best tips I saw in the stack here that, like, wow, that's really cool.
That is cool. And there's a slew of them there, too. So
yeah,
that's really cool.
25 of them, guys. So check them all out. It's really worth it. And I really appreciate Fast Company for kind of putting this one out. It was well overdue, and it's great as in one place. So check it out in our link there, and thank Fast Company for that. Thank you so much. Harry McCracken, that's it.
Harry McCracken.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
So my tip here, guys, is let's see, save as ebook. So what this fella here, Alex Adam, has done on GitHub. This is on GitHub, by the way. We'll have the links in the show notes here. Is allow you to save a web page selection as an ebook in the EPUB format on Chrome, Firefox, and Opera. It's an extension, and you know it'll take a little bit of tech know-how to install it. Probably like a little bit of terminal work or whatever. But he shows down below how to do it on the GitHub page for your various browsers, and you can also convert EPUB to MOBI if needed. This is all relatively new, so I'm sure you'll have some fun working with this thing. But it's kind of neat that you can save all these pages or web pages, a series of them, as an ebook, and then read it later offline on your Kindle or whatever your particular as you want. So kind of a fun little extension. Save as ebook. Check it out on GitHub. Check our show notes for the link to that. Have fun.
That is so cool. Thanks for doing that. That is cool. Cause we're considering for the Cherry Blossom Festival, creating a photo book, and it'd be kind of interesting to kind of do it this way. Yeah. Wow. Cool. Well, thanks,
man. All right, guys, everyone. Thanks so much for watching again and listening. I am Adolfo Fronda again at NerdStalker on Twitter. You can get more information the show at nerdstalker.com and on YouTube at NerdStalker, YouTube.com/ NerdStalkerTV, NerdStalkerTV, and check us out on iTunes and all the places. Greg, where can we get more information about you?
No, you can always reach me at socialgreg@nerdstalker.com for any kind of articles or tips or events that you want me to look at and promote, as well as partnerships. You know, we've been doing a lot more partnerships in the last couple of years, as you see at the top of our podcast here. So, feel free to reach out to us with any kind of pitches like that. We're always willing to listen and save bucks for our Nerd Soccer community at the
same
time.
That's right. All right, everyone. Thanks so much for listening, watching. See you next week.
All right. We believe in tech, startups, design, and you. Be careful out there. Thank you.
See ya.